My name is Bond. James Bond.
Hello, everybody. It's the Film and Water Podcast. I'm Rob, of course. This is a special episode in that I am joined by two of my pals, Dan Greenfield. Hi, Dan.
Hello, darling.
And John Trumbull.
Are we all supposed to be imitating Roger Moore? I didn't get that memo.
No, I'm sorry. I just couldn't resist. My son actually does it better than I do. I just couldn't resist.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, that was definitely not in the plan. But yes, as Dan might have suggested with his horrible impersonation, we're here to talk about Roger Moore, who died today at the age of 89. I mean, of course, you know, the preponderance of our love for him comes from the fact that he was James Bond, but he did a lot of other great things, which we'll talk about, and some of us have some personal stories about the man. But, I mean, you know, the main thing, as I think about James Bond, I mean, he was my James Bond. Mm-hmm. The first James Bond I ever saw was Moonraker, which is not a great way to start, but, you know, that's my dad didn't know. He just took me to the first James Bond movie that was available to me. But he was always my James Bond, and you know, he was a beloved figure of my childhood just as much as Christopher Reeve or Harrison Ford. I mean, he was just one of these guys who he was like a hero. He was just a screen hero. And, you know, the previous memorial episode that we did was for Carrie Fisher, which I did with David Gutierrez and Ryan Daly, which we did back in December. And we tried really hard, but that episode ended up being pretty sad. Because, of course, you know, Carrie died very young, and she died right at the point where she was sort of returning to national prominence. And so it really felt like, wow, what awful timing for her to die when she did. This one, you know, I'm sad that Roger Moore is gone, but he lived an amazing life. He lived to be 89 years old. He got to live long enough to see how beloved he was to millions of people. So I don't think this episode is going to be particularly sad for any of us. It's more of a celebration. I mean, am I wrong, guys?
No, I agree. I mean, my wife even today, she said, you know, the thing about Roger Moore was that, and you can't say this about all of the actors who played James Bond, is that he really seemed to love having played James Bond. And so there's something delightful about thinking about Roger Moore and his performance and his time as James Bond. And he was, in much the same way that you just said, he was, when I was a kid, he was my introduction to James Bond.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, he really did seem to love the fact that he was, I guess, the custodian of that part for like a good, what was it, 15 years that he played the part? He started in,
I think 12, 73 to 85, right? Isn't that
okay? Okay, yeah. That sounds right. Yeah. I was forgetting what year the Live and Let Die was. But, I think when you play a part like James Bond, at some point you have to kind of come to terms with the fact that Bond as a character, he's like bigger than pretty much any actor who plays him. And you kind of have to make your peace with that if you're going to live your life after you've stopped playing the role. And he really did seem to. And he seemed to, you know, get a kick out of it and see nothing but the positive side.
I wonder how much his age had to do with that, because he actually, you know, he came into the part already in middle age. He had had, you know,
he was
a couple.
Connery.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he was older than Connery. He looked younger, but was older. He already had a career. He had a TV career. He had a couple of series under his belt. You know, by the time he stopped being James Bond, he was definitely too old to be playing James Bond. And that really was the meat of his career. He was already at that stage in his career. It wasn't as if he was still, you know, some guys who are younger, they feel like they've been typecast. They feel like, you know, it's not the same way now as it was back then with as far as typecasting. But I'm wondering how much that had to do with it. You know, by the time he pretty much quit James Bond, he wasn't exactly retiring from acting, but his best years were already behind him. It wasn't like he lost out on something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was like in his 50s by the time he gave up the role, I think.
I think he was even older than – was he even 60 yet? Or
well, let's see. He was born in 27, so right. If he stopped playing it in 85, that's – he was just shy of 60.
Yeah, 58, 59 years old, yeah.
I remember the reading about the moment he knew he was getting too old for the part is when he met on the set of A View to a Kill, he met Tanya Roberts' mother. And of course, Tiny Roberts was his love interest in the movie, and he was older than Tiny Roberts' mother.
Right.
And he was like, okay, I'm done. I got to pack this in, fellas. You know, he knew that. I mean, yeah, he did seem to kind of, unlike Daniel Craig, who seems like he's dying to get out of being James Bond, and Connery, who went on to, you know, a huge career after James Bond, Roger Moore seemed to kind of just live as the ex-James Bond. I mean, he continued to do other movies, but he kind of did other movies where he spoofed his image. You know, he played like a, you know, he did other spy movies. He was in a movie called Bullseye with Michael Caine. He did the voice in the Cats and Dogs animated movie where he plays a character. Yeah. He plays a character called Lazenby in that movie.
Oh, I mean, wow.
Yeah. I mean, he seemed to really, and you know, he went on to devote himself to charity work. He was like an ambassador for UNICEF and things like that. And he really seemed to just kind of, you know, be like, hey, I'm a millionaire. Why not just enjoy life? And I think that there's something kind of, you know, I mean, hey, to each their own. However you want to manage your life, that's your business. But there's something kind of, I think any of us would envy that, to be able to just kind of just say, and I'm done. And I'm just going to kind of go, you know, hang out at the Riviera for the rest of my life. I mean, who wouldn't want that life?
No doubt. I mean, not just like hang out at the Riviera, but hanging out at the Riviera having been James Bond.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
right.
That's a pretty damn good life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, 12 years of James Bond, and you know, I mean, it's, I mean, that, you know, it is a you know, well put, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, he served the longest tenure of any of the Bonds, both in terms of the years. He did it for 12 years. No, none of them have done it for 12 years. Although Craig's getting close. And he also, what are your guys' opinion? Do you guys count Never Say Never Again as a Bond movie?
I count it with an asterisk.
Okay, John?
I guess. I mean, they're all owned by the same people now. I mean, it's still not part of the official series, so right. Yeah, with an asterisk.
Okay, sure. Because if you count Never Say Never Again, Connery did 7 Bonds and Moore did 7 Bonds. If you don't count Never Say Never Again, Moore did one more than so, which means he did more than any other character. What were your Dan? What is your first Bond movie? Is it Live and Let Die?
No, it was The Man with the Golden Gun.
Okay.
Yeah, I wrote a piece today at 13th Dimension, sort of, you know, so if anybody wants to read that, they can check that out. But for me, my dad took me, and I was 7, going on 8, because it came out in late 74. And I don't know if we saw it after the new year or not, but it was that winter when it came out. And it took me to the movie theater, and the thing I didn't get going in was that I didn't understand that James Bond was a good guy. Because I was a Batman kid, and Batman didn't use guns. Only bad guys used guns. Mm. So I didn't understand how this guy who runs around, he wasn't a cop, he wasn't in a uniform, you know, he's this guy running around with a gun, and all I saw were, like, the TV ads or whatever. I thought that he was a bad guy, and I didn't understand why.
Tuxedo Man is shooting people.
Right. I didn't understand why my dad wanted to take me to this movie with this guy who used a gun, and I just was – it was lost on me. And he's like, no, trust me. You'll have a good time. Like, all right, I'm fine. So I walked out transfixed. It is the only thing I could – at that age, the only thing that exceeded it and the only thing that I could compare it to was seeing Star Wars 2.5 years later, because it was seismic. I walked out of that movie completely changed. I was a new kid. I was – now I had Batman and now I had James Bond. And the locations and the excitement and – you know, as Rob, you and I have talked about, and as I've written numerous times, you know, like even Christopher Lee took on this whole new life for me, you know, having seen that movie. But it was fantastic. I started buying paperback novels, you know, at the local flea market of James Bond after this, even though I wasn't even old enough to really understand them or read them. I liked having them. I got a cap gun that had a shoulder holster. And I used to run around the summertime with a blazer on and with over my shoulder holster and shorts, running around pretending I was James Bond. And it wasn't even until a few years later that I even understood that Sean Connery was the quote unquote real James Bond. For me, Roger Moore was it, pretty much for that movie and The Spy Who Loved Me. After that, it kind of changed. But that was my first introduction, was The Man with the Golden Gun.
All right. So, John, what was your first Bond movie?
You know, I'm not positive what my first Bond movie was that I saw in the theater. I don't have a clear memory of seeing any of the Roger Moore ones in the theater. I think my clearest memory of Roger Moore was, like, I saw his Bonds on cable, like, because when I would visit my dad, he had HBO, which I didn't have at home with my mom. And so I would see the Roger Moore ones on cable. I think some of the later ones, like Octopussy or A View to a Kill. But I have a strong memory of seeing the poster for Moonraker in the theater when, I guess, when I was seeing Star Wars or something after that. And, like, seeing, you know, the Bond in a spacesuit, and he's pointing the gun at you, and there are all those women in the scantily clad little mini dresses that are, like, cut to the navel, and that just seemed incredibly scandalous to me at young age. I would have been, like, about 5 or 6, I think. When did Moonraker come out, like, 77?
78.
Okay, so I would have been about 6, and that just seemed like, oh, my, this is like, big-time adult stuff here. So that was my first impression. So, like, yeah, and then, like, you know, kind of like what Dan was saying, like, I first discovered Roger Moore as James Bond, and then you discover, like, oh, there's this whole other James Bond before this other James Bond. And then, you know, I discovered Connery, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think back of, like, when I was a kid and my dad taking me to Moonraker, and, you know, it ends with him, like, saying, oh, Bond is attempting reentry. I'm like, my dad must have just been mortified. He just had to pretend, you know, he just been like, okay, that didn't mean anything, son. Don't worry about it. Let's just keep going. But, I mean, he kept taking me, you know, obviously, because he knew I enjoyed them. Yeah, I mean, everyone, it's kind of a standard trope now. Everyone understands that, like, the differences between the two Bonds is that, you know, Connery was much more harder edged, much more violent, much more sort of short tempered, while Moore, by his own admission, was much more gentler. He was much, much gentler. He was more of a lover than a fighter. Mm. And he apparently was bothered by some of the violence in the James Bond movies, which is, you know, pretty mild by most standards. And even he was still bothered by that. And, you know, maybe if the first Bond movie I'd ever seen was a Connery one, maybe Connery would be my Bond. But I don't know. I think the Roger Moore version was perfect for me because I don't know. I watch the Connery movies and I like them. I love them, in fact, some of them. And I think he's great in the role. But I relate more to Roger Moore just because he seems more like a nice guy. I mean, he seems more delighted at the adventure he's on, as opposed to the Connery version, who seems like he's just kind of pissed off from all of this, that he's got to do all of this. But the Moore Bond seems like, oh, this is great, this is fun. And I, you know, you have to think that that's Roger Moore bleeding into the role, because he's just having the time of his life. He's in Monte Carlo, he's in, you know, France, he's in where he's getting, there's all these great places, he's eating this great food thanks to Cubby Broccoli, he's getting to romance all these women. You have to think he's just having the time of his life.
Yeah, no, it's really true when you say that. And for me, I mean, Sean Connery is James Bond, and after, you know, and that's in the hindsight of having seen them all now and having had a chance to, you know, you take it in some. For me, Sean Connery really does embody the nature of the role. But I think that Daniel Craig is the best actor to have played the role. But Roger Moore holds a really special fondness, you know, for me. Because he was the first, and because he was also relatable as a kid, he was not as intimidating. I mean, he's sort of, not to put too fine a point on it, and I know that I tend to go to this well a lot, but he's sort of the Adam West version of Batman. He's that version of James Bond. You know, the movies are campier, they're sillier, they're a lot more fun. They don't take themselves too seriously, and he seems to be enjoying himself while he's at it.
Yeah, that's pleasurable to watch, you know? Yeah. It's like I want to watch a guy who's having a good time. He really did seem to like what he was doing. Right. Like, now, do you have each of you. Like, John, do you have a particular favorite of his? It may not be the first one you've seen. Is there one of the Moore ones that is your favorite?
Yes, there absolutely is. I'd say, like, as I said before, like, the Moore ones get a little more muddled in my mind because, like, I became more of a Connery guy, and I've rewatched those films a lot more. But when I first saw The Spy Who Loved Me, I was like, wow, that's a really good James Bond film, and Roger Moore is really good in it. I mean, that it's wonderfully plotted. It looks great. It's kind of like the quintessential 70s Bond, you know? It's just got so many iconic parts in it, and that was like his third Bond movie, and I feel like that's where he really, really took ownership of the role, it seems to me, you know?
I love that in that opening gambit where he's in the cabin romancing the girl, and she's mm-hmm. like, I need you, James, and he's like, so does England!
And he's in the canary yellow ski suit.
Oh, man.
That's great.
I can't picture great. Connery saying that. You need Roger Moore to kind of pull that off. It seems so true. Perfect. Yeah, Spy Who Loved Me is, I would argue, I think Spy Who Loved Me is probably the best of the movies. It's not particularly my all-time favorite. But Dan, what about you? Is your first one you saw your favorite, or is there another one?
No, it is The Man with the Golden Gun, and I know that it's usually at the bottom of most Bond lists, you know, that people put together, maybe just above the Dalton movies that most people generally tend to dislike. But I still love that movie, and it's even despite, you know, and the shortcomings are obvious in that movie. You know, the whole sequence with Clifton James, for example, his whole inclusion in the movie to begin with is horrible, actually. It's just horrible on so many levels. But I love the movie because I love the location. I love the villain. I think that Britt Eklund is really, really easy to watch throughout the whole movie. She's fun. And he's great. He's winking through that the entire thing. But I also think it's a really, really good-looking movie. But it's not as good a movie in terms of the writing and the crispness of The Spy Who Loved Me, which I would recognize as the superior movie. It's just, this is one of those things where I actually can't put the emotional side of it aside. The Man with the Golden Gun just speaks to me on a level that goes deeper than the other the Roger Moore James Bond movies. The ones in the 80s, they all blur together for me. I couldn't tell you what the difference between A View to a Kill and Octopussy, for example. if you quoted a scene from me, I would only be guessing which was in which movie. Unlike the Connery movies, which I know them all chapter and verse because those are the ones that I really tend to focus on, with the exception of a couple of the more ones like Man with the Golden Gun and The Spy Who Loved Me, and to a lesser extent, Live and Let Die.
I think part of the reason the Man with the Golden Gun, I really like Man with the Golden Gun. I don't totally get why that one is kind of run down as much. I think part of it, I know you know your love of Christopher Lee, but that's one of the things I like about it is that they gave him another actor of that mm-hmm. level stature to be the bad guy. They didn't really do that as much in some of the later movies.
No.
You know, I mean, as much as Spy Who Loved Me is terrific, that villain just is not as memorable as Christopher Lee, you know.
No, true.
So, but yeah, I mean, I my favorite is, and I've said this a bunch of times before, and we haven't gotten to it on the show yet, I plan to, is For Your Eyes Only. I saw the second one I saw, my dad took me to it, and I just loved everything about it. I loved the sort of terseness of it. It's kind of funny that, you know, people are like, when Casino Royale came out and it was like, ooh, this is a back-to-basics Bond. That's not been done mm-hmm. before. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's what For Your Eyes Only is. It was after Moonraker. And they were like, all right, we've gone batshit crazy with Moonraker. We got to scale this back a little.
So that's a cycle all the Bond movies go through, though. Yeah. I mean, they did the same thing after You Only Live Twice. Like, Honor Majesty's Secret Service kind of brings it back down to earth. And then it starts building up again.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after Moonraker, they bring it back down. And, you know, it's very cyclical.
Yeah.
Well, even the Dalton movies, remember, they were billed as also the quote-unquote realistic James Bond.
Right.
He just didn't have the charisma to pull it off. And, I mean, I don't mean to knock Timothy Dalton. The movies are serviceable, but he never really seemed to embody the role like the others did. But then they bring in Pierce Brosnan because he was sort of like a junior version of Roger Moore. And then they go back to Daniel Craig. And so, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen The Kingsman, but I was watching that movie and I thought to myself, this is actually should be what the next James Bond series should be like, almost like a satire, but also really exciting and a lot of fun.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw the trailer for the – I haven't seen the first Kingsman movie.
You're You would dig it.
I saw the trailer for the second one, and it made me want to see the first one. I was like, oh, this looks like a lot of fun.
I totally passed it up until a friend insisted that I go see it. And I was like, all right. So we rented it, and I loved it. It was great.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like we are due for kind of a, after Craig is over, the kind of, you know, a lighter Bond. But, yeah, I mean, the thing I love Moore's performance in For Your Eyes Only, and I have to admit, much like you said, Dan, you can't remove the emotion of it. I remember distinctly a couple of months. I mean, that movie came out in June of 1981. And then in August, when I was on vacation with my family, I was at a newsstand. And somebody had For Your Eyes Only number 2 from Marvel Comics, the second half of the adaptation. And, you know, 1981, this is pre-VCRs. It's still pretty much pre-cable. And so, you know, when a movie left theaters, it was gone. You didn't get to see it again. And so I got to, like, relive the movie through that comic book. And even though the comic book itself isn't particularly very good, I don't care. I love it completely. And now every time I hear the Sheena Easton song, it just makes me so happy. I feel like I have such a goofy grin on my face every time I hear that song come in. So that is my favorite. I still think Spy You Love Me is the best one, but I like that Moore was able to kind of downshift a little into the more, you know, kind of just straightforward spy adventure.
Is that the one where he sends the car over the cliff? He, like, kicks it over? Okay, yeah. That's like one of his more hardcore moments as
right.
Bond.
And he didn't like doing that. He didn't want to do that, but Broccoli talked him into it. But yeah, there's a guy teetering on a car ledge, and Bond just kicks it over the side. So I was like, don't mess with Roger Moore. He'll kill you if he has to. The last two, Octopussy and View to a Kill, they're a little tough going, but, you know, what can you do? You know, I mean, all the Bond actors, I'd say, have had a couple where you're a little like, okay, you probably should have, right? You know, Lazenby's the only one who, went out on a high note because he went in on a high note. You know?
Well, but even with Lazenby, it took a generation for people to really appreciate that movie. Mm-hmm. Because I remembered as a kid, everybody was like, oh, that was terrible. Oh, it's not a real James Bond. And then, I that's a story for another time, but I didn't see that until I was an adult. And I thought, what the hell's wrong with this movie? This is great.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, also, if you look at that movie, like, you know, from a modern day context, it's not a big deal for us to have a different James Bond. Right. When you know, Lazenby took it over, he was taken over from Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was like working against 5 films with the other guy and the only other guy to play the role in movies. And, you know, by the time Moore came around, people were, I think, more accepting of the fact that this is a part that you could recast, you know?
And he had already played a very similar role in the same. I mean, I think that also worked in his favor. He was familiar to both British and American audiences. I used to watch The Saint on television when I was a kid. I'm a few years older than you guys, but it used to be on, I think, Saturday nights on Channel 2 in the New York area. That's the CBS affiliate. On Saturday nights, they used to run some of the old 60s British adventure shows. They used to run The Avengers. They also used to run The New Avengers, the later, you know, redo. And they would run The Return of the Saint, and they would run The Saint. And that's how I saw some of my other Roger Moore. And I was like, I was watching The Saint. I'm like, I feel like I'm watching James Bond. And I think that probably, you know, helped him a great degree also, that he was a somewhat known quantity playing a similar kind of role, in the same way that, if you remember, Pierce Brosnan, because of Remington Steele, people wanted him as the next James Bond because he was basically playing that character as a gag. But because he had contractual obligations, it took them, you know, a couple of Timothy Dalton movies before he finally got to be James Bond.
Right.
It's amazing to think that, you know, Hollywood really didn't know what to do with Roger Moore in the beginning, because if you look at his filmography, he's got about half a dozen films before he moves to TV. And all the films he did before he moved to TV are pretty nondescript, you know? I mean, none of them are terribly memorable, and he's like third or fourth billed. And then he comes to TV, and he does Maverick, and he does The Persuaders, and then he does The Saint, as you just mentioned, and that's what made him a star. And then the minute he lands in James Bond, he's so perfect in the role, you're like, how did Hollywood not be able to figure this out? How did they not know what to do with him? Because he's so perfect in this part. He just hit the ground running, and he just remained this huge deal. And, you know, he continued to do other movies in and out of the Bond films. I mean, like, do you guys have any particular favorite Bond, non-Bond Roger Moore movies?
Well, not a favorite movie, but it's a memory that is kind of – he did a movie called Gold right around the same time as The Man with the Golden Gun. Or at least they came out around the same time.
I'm sensing a theme there.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, he was in another movie that had Gold in the title too, like in the 50s. You know, it was like, why? But I was at my dad's, and I remember seeing this commercial for this movie – you know, James Bond's Roger Moore in Gold. And I insisted on watching the movie because I thought Gold, James Bond, got to be worth watching. And right. My dad's like, this has got nothing to do with James Bond. You're going to hate it. And I'm like, but dad, and he's like, all right, fine. So we turn it on to channel 2 or 7 or whatever it was on. And 10 minutes in, I'm like, this is not what I came for. So that was it. I was like, okay, now I get it. It's got nothing to do with James Bond. I've seen it from my own eyes and I can move on.
It's funny. You know who directed Gold, Dan?
No. Who?
Peter Hunt.
You're kidding me.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. So a lot of James Bond connections there.
Yes.
Check that out. I've never seen that.
I've never seen it either. Now. Yeah. John, what about you?
For me, mine's a little off the beaten path. Like, in addition to being a James Bond fan, I'm also a big Sherlock Holmes fan. And Roger Moore, I think around 1976 or so, he did a TV movie called Sherlock Holmes in New York, where he played Sherlock Holmes, and John Huston played Professor Moriarty.
Whoa.
Charlotte Rampling was Irene Adler, who's
the icy beauty of Charlotte Rampling.
And in this TV movie, and Patrick McNee is Dr. Watson.
Oh, come on.
So there's another spy connection there.
Come on.
And Irene Adler in this movie, she has a young son who is played by Roger Moore's real life son. I think it was Jeffrey, but I'd have to double check that. He was like about 10 at the time or something. And, you know, and it's Roger Moore as Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I'll be honest, he was not my favorite Sherlock Holmes, but it's a really interesting movie, and there's some really neat stuff in it. I haven't seen it in years, but it is entertaining.
How is it? Sherlock Holmes in New York, is it New York modern day or New York in the Victorian era or whatever it was?
It is period appropriate, so it's in the Victorian era. It takes place, I think, around, 1890 or 1900, something like that. Maybe 1904 on the outside.
Wow. With that cast, how is that not more famous? Good Lord.
I don't know. I don't even know if it's out on, like, DVD or Blu-ray. I doubt it. Maybe it's, like, maybe the Warner's Archive has it or something like that. I can't even recall which company it was. I can look it up and give you some more information.
That's amazing. I see it here on his IMDb, and I was like, he played Sherlock Holmes? That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. When I was a kid, I had my dad. I told you, I mentioned my dad took me to see the James Bond. He took me and my sister to see the James Bond movies. I also had him take me to see Folks, which is also known as North Sea Hijack when it was released overseas. And it's Roger Moore versus Anthony Perkins. Anthony Perkins plays a terrorist. And
wow.
Yeah, and it's not a particularly great movie. It was on Netflix briefly, and I rewatched it, and it didn't really hold up. But it was one of those things that when you kind of have kid logic, where you like this actor, so you want to see this actor in other projects.
Right.
Because you're sort of expecting him to be the same, even though he won't be. And Dan, you'll appreciate this. That was the reason, like, I used to watch episodes of Fantasy Island, because I was like, ooh, Adam West is on this one.
Right. You know? Right. Well, that's what I was thinking about Gold. It was like, oh, it's got Gold in the title, and it's got Roger Moore. And on TV, they were like, they use James Bond as the selling point. He plays James Bond. Come watch the movie. And I'm like, I'm in. Until 10 minutes in, I was right back out again.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some part of my kid brain that knows that he's not going to be James Bond in Folks, right. But yet right. I'm like, or Adam West is not going to be Batman in Fantasy Island, but maybe, who knows? Who knows what he might do, you know?
Or at least he'll be close enough that I can, like, that I can enjoy it for that, but no, it's just, that's like, yeah.
Right, yeah, so So I remember my dad took me to see Folks, and I remember I enjoyed it. But actually, a movie I did want to mention that Roger Moore is in, which is actually a really good movie. It's called Shout at the Devil. It's from 1976. It's him and Lee Marvin.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and it's, I'll give you the plot. It's during World War I, a British aristocrat, an American entrepreneur, and the latter's attractive young daughter set out to destroy a German battlecruiser who is awaiting repairs in an inlet just off Zanzibar. It is, again, directed by Peter Hunt. So, again, wow. Those guys, yeah, yeah. Ian Holm is in it. He's one of the bad guys. It's a really fun adventure movie with some surprising level of violence for 1976, and Lee Marvin is just swinging for the fences. He is chewing the scenery left and right, and Moore is a great counterpart to because he's kind of like underplaying a little. So that's like a really good movie. If you ever have a chance to watch Shout of the Devil, I'd give it a shot, because it said that Moore is really fun in it.
Wow. Yeah. I'll check that out. Now, I'll go ahead, Rob.
No, you go ahead, John.
Well, there was another thing in Moore's filmography, which is kind of like, it's not a film he ended up doing, but I think it's something he came close to doing at one point, was the movie version of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He was discussed for playing the part of Campion Bond, who in the comic series is like basically James Bond's grandfather. Huh. And he's like the liaison to the group of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And as you probably remember, Sean Connery himself played Alan Quartermain in that film.
The movie that ended his career.
Yeah, and Connery has not done a film since, because apparently shooting that was just so unpleasant. But, I mean, we could have had Roger Moore and Sean Connery in a movie together, and one of them playing a character named Bond who would not be unlike their M. And I'm just like, wait, that was discussed, and they didn't do that? They decided to cast somebody else? I forget why he didn't end up playing the role, but it boggles my mind that was ever a possibility, and that they didn't do that, because that would have made that movie a must-see.
That would have made that movie, I would have actually seen it. Like you say, yeah. I never bothered with it, but if that had happened, I would have made a point to see it.
I mean, the movie certainly has its problems, but I mean, if nothing else, it would have been remembered as the film where you finally got, you know, the two Bonds together, because they were good friends in real life.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, one of the things I saw a lot on YouTube, Twitter today, was people tweeting pictures of like Roger Moore with the other Bonds. There's mm-hmm. there's a great picture of him and Timothy Dalton, Dalton, him and Pierce Brosnan, and then one with Roger Moore and Daniel Craig. And it's neat seeing them. And you know, I'm sure I wasn't the only one that was hoping that as the movies went on, they would find a way to work Roger Moore into one of these movies. Because, again, as we talked about at the top of the show, he seemed the most comfortable with his post-Bond career being known as Bond. He seemed the most at home with it. And so I kept expecting, at some point they're going to work him in, just in a cameo. And I'm very sad that that's never going to happen. I'm very sad that there will never be a reunion of the Bonds. They came close a couple of years ago at the Oscars, but apparently that got squelched. But
I mean, there was talk about it, but I mean, did they get that close to
maybe
doing
it? Maybe they didn't get close, but apparently it was the idea was presented as, well, maybe we can get the guys together. And as long as all five of them were still alive, you know, you thought, well, who knows? Something could happen.
It would have been incredible. It would have been incredible to see all those guys on stage together at the same time, and when they were all still with us and in, you know, reasonably good health.
Yeah.
And
wearing tuxedos.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you play that music and oh God. I mean, I I mean, I can see it in my mind's eye, and I'm practically tearing up just thinking about it. I mean, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it said as long as the guys were all still around, I thought you can always hold out hope, and now we know that's never going to happen, and that makes me makes me sad. Now, there's two more things I do want to mention before we kind of start to wrap up, and I know, John, you have a story that you absolutely have to tell. But the one piece of trivia I found today when looking him up on Wikipedia, and I did not know this. I thought I was pretty well versed in Bond trivia. Roger Moore played James Bond on television in 1964.
Oh, what? Yes.
In a comedy series called Mainly Millicent.
Yeah, I saw that on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, and the whole clip is on YouTube. He plays James. It's not a joke. He calls himself James Bond. He's a secret agent, and it's a comedy bit, but he is flat out James Bond. And I was like, I never heard of this. I had no idea. So you can go find it on YouTube. Just type in Roger Moore, Mainly Millicent, and you will find not only the clip, you will find the clip introed by one of the producers of the Bond movies.
I'm going to totally check that out.
You can't believe it. I never even heard of this. So he was, you know, they were thinking of him as Bond early on.
You know, it's weird because, like, with most of the actors who ended up playing Bond, it seems to just kind of be in the air before they get the part. I saw an old episode of Charlie's Angels that guest starred Timothy Dalton, and he was playing like this cat burglar guy, and he was like romancing Farrah Fawcett's character. It was when Farrah Fawcett was coming on and doing a periodic guest shot on Charlie's Angels, and they're briefing the angels at the beginning, and they describe Dalton's character as a man of James Bondian tastes, and this is like 1979, 1980, something like that. And it's just like, whoa, that's weird.
but gee, it would be another 10 years before he got the gig too.
I know. And, you know, and there was that with, you know, Brosnan too. Everybody seemed to think that he should play the part years before he actually got the part.
Well, the amazing thing about Brosnan is that it was because he was still contractually connected to Remington Steele. He couldn't get out of it. He had to finish the show, and he missed out on at least two James Bond movies because of it.
Yeah, because like from what I understand, he actually got the part, and the show was ended at that point, but then the Remington Steele producers decided to capitalize on the publicity of that and say, hey, let's do some Remington Steele TV movies or something, and they brought the show back, and because he was still obligated, like you said, he had to do those, and so he had to drop out of Bond.
Can you imagine what must have been going through his mind when he got the call from his agent? Not so fast.
Oh, and oddly enough, like Dalton ends up doing the movie that was written for Brosnan, and then the first movie that Brosnan did, Goldeneye, was the one that was originally written for Dalton because he still had the part at that point. So.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, today, over the internet, this story popped up from a guy named Mark Haynes about how he met Roger Moore. Did you guys see this story?
I did see this, yes.
I didn't.
I probably shouldn't read it because, I don't know, maybe people should just find it on Twitter. But, you know, here it is. Because it's just incredible, this story. I guess I'll go ahead and read it. So this is from a guy named Mark Haynes. He's on Twitter. If you go to Google and you just type in Mark Haynes Roger Moore, you'll see it's all over the internet. But this is amazing. This is what he wrote. As a 7-year-old in 1983, in the days before first class lounges at airports, I was with my granddad in a Nice airport and saw Roger Moore sitting at the departure gate reading a paper. I told my granddad I'd just seen James Bond and asked if we could go over so I could get his autograph. My granddad had no idea who James Bond or Roger Moore was, so we walked over and he popped me in front of Roger Moore with the words, "My grandson says you're famous. Can you sign this?" As charming as you'd expect, Roger asks my name and duly signs the back of my plane ticket, a fulsome note full of best wishes. I'm ecstatic, but as we head back to our seats, I glance down at the signature. It's hard to decipher, but it definitely doesn't say James Bond. My granddad looks at it. Half figures out it says Roger Moore. I have no idea who that is, and my heart sinks. I tell my granddad he'd signed it wrong, that he put in someone else's name. So my granddad heads back to Roger Moore, holding the ticket, which he just signed. I remember staying by our seats and my granddad saying, "He says you've signed the wrong name. He says your name is James Bond." Roger Moore's face crinkled up with realization, and he beckoned me over. When I was by his knee, he leaned over, looked from side to side, raised an eyebrow, and in a hushed voice said to me, I have to sign my name as Roger Moore because otherwise Blofeld might find out I'm here. He asked me not to tell anyone that I'd just seen James Bond, and he thanked me for keeping his secret. I went back to our seats, my nerves absolutely jangling with delight. My granddad asked me if he'd signed James Bond. No, I said, I'd got it wrong. I was working with James Bond now. Now,
wow.
I read that story, and the person that quoted it cut the story off at that point, so I thought that was the whole story. Now there's another paragraph to it, so this is the other part of it. Many, many years later, I was working as a scriptwriter on a recording that involved UNICEF, and Roger Moore was doing a piece to camera as an ambassador. He was completely lovely, and while the cameramen were setting up, I told him in passing the story of when I'd met him in the Nice airport. He was happy to hear it, and he had a chuckle and said, well, I don't remember, but I'm glad you got to meet James Bond. So that was lovely. And then he did something so brilliant. After the filming, he walked past me in the corridor, heading out to his car. But as he got level, he paused, looked both ways, raised an eyebrow, and in a hushed voice said, of course I remember meeting in Nice, but I didn't say anything in here because those cameramen, any one of them could be working for Blofeld. I was delighted at 30 as I had been at 7. What a man. What a tremendous man.
That is great.
That is the single greatest hero story of all time. No one will ever top. I literally couldn't think of, I mean, unless somebody met Christopher Reeve and Christopher Reeve literally flew, you're not going to have a better story of meeting a childhood hero than this story.
Sort of like Roger Moore assassinating, you know, a hitman who is after you. That's the best possible story.
There's
wow.
Something so lovely about the idea that Roger Moore was every bit as sweet as you wanted him to be. I mean, I'm sure he was like a person like anybody else. I'm sure he had his moments. But the idea, can you imagine being 8 and being told by James Bond himself that you're working with him? That is, it's beyond comprehension. It's beyond comprehension. And I said, it makes me love Roger Moore that much more. You know, it just does. And you know, the fact that he showed up again, he was in like Spice World, he shows up in Spice World. And you see that such a sense of humor about himself. I don't know. The guy is just so wonderful. But of course, of the three of us, one of us has actually met Mr. Moore. So John, you have to tell that story about meeting Roger Moore.
Oh boy. Well, it's gonna seem incredibly anticlimactic after that story.
You still got to meet Roger Moore, John.
I still got to meet Roger Moore. I met a James Bond. I met George Lazenby too in passing, but that's a story for another time, I suppose. So in 2003, I went into New York City with a friend of mine, and we saw a show that had just debuted on Broadway. I think it was still in previews, and it was called The Play What I Wrote. And it's about like, you know, this hapless comedy duo putting on a play. It was this big hit over in England. And the big conceit of the play was that they would have a celebrity cameo in the second act who was playing the title role in the play that they're putting on, in the play within a play, if this makes sense. And so, like, you know, the first act is kind of build up and stuff, and they kind of, you know, tease that they're going to have this big mystery celebrity, and they drop the names of a few celebrities throughout the show to kind of keep you guessing who it might be. And the night I saw the show, it was Roger Moore who comes on, and he does like all these sort of farcical shenanigans with him. He's like, he's in a dress at one point, I think, you know, wearing it over his street clothes. And, you know, and he was obviously just such a good sport. And after the play was over, my friend and I, we went out to the stage door to wait outside and see Roger Moore. And he came out and he, you know, was waving to people, and he signed our playbills. And my friend, I think, said, you know, Sir Roger, I think he was knighted by this point. Like, how long are you going to be in the show? And he's like, well, I'm not really supposed to say, but I'll be in it for 2 weeks. And, you know, and he was very nice, and he was like just very charming. And, you know, he's what you want James Bond to be. He was very James Bondian, you know. So that was my little encounter with James Bond. And, like, you know, for a few nights after, my friend and I were just like, we met James Bond.
Yeah, it's amazing. I would not, like I said, I really think about when I was mulling over his career today. And I think about that when I was a kid, I had those couple of guys that were just the guys. And it's, you know, mm-hmm. I said, I know for Dan, it's Adam West. But I mean, it's, for me, it really is. It's like a Christopher Reeve, Harrison Ford, Roger Moore. And just those are my guys. Those are the franchise guys. Those are my heroes. And, you know, it's just we all know that I probably, you know, most of us probably wouldn't want to meet Harrison Ford necessarily if you could have the chance. It might not be the experience you wanted it to be. But it sounds like Roger Moore would have been that guy. You know, he would have been he was comfortable in his own skin. He loved his life. He had a great time, and he got to play one of the most iconic characters of all time, and he did it really well, and he lived a great, amazing life. And, you know, like I said, my hope, as I said at the top of the show, my hope was that this episode would be more celebratory, and I think it was. I think we're all having a good time, because it's like, I just think such warm thoughts about Roger Moore, and I know, like, I just want to watch For Your Eyes Only again now. Even though I watched it today, I want to watch it again, because it's just so fun to watch him.
I think that about covers it for me.
Yeah, that was kind of a perfect ending there, Rob.
All right, well, okay then. Well, again, guys, thanks for coming on and talk about this. We had to kind of obviously throw this together. I was really floored when I saw the news this morning. And, I mean, again, he was 89, a great life, a great long life. And he lived long enough to see how much his work meant to so many millions of people. And what an amazing thing that has got to be. So.
You know, he's written more than a few memoirs about his time as James Bond. I think it could be as many as three.
Wow.
So I'm forgetting the titles of them. I should have looked them up beforehand. But I mean, I think one of them was called like My Name Is Bond. But I'd have to look them up later, and I'll send.
I wonder if there are audio versions, because I got to hear him in that voice.
That would be great.
You know, read the stories. So I just want to hear him talking about Caroline Monroe, right, Dan?
Oh my God!
Does Dan like Carolyn Monroe?
a passing fancy.
I was going to try to make it through the entire podcast without mentioning her, because of course she was in The Spy Who Loved Me and all of that. But now that you brought it up, you know, Christopher Lee and all of that. But it's my son asked me today. He says, you know, where does Roger Moore stand for you in you know, is you know, and I when I think of like the Mount Olympus of cheese, and I mean cheese in the best possible way, you know, I think of William Shatner, Charlton Heston, Sean Connery, and Adam West, and I'm like, well, he's not like at that level, but he's right there in the hall with them, and he's just one of those guys who I will always have a deep affection for because of how much he meant to me as a kid and how much he. You know, how can you not admire a guy who seemed to enjoy himself as much as he did?
He's like what the dream of being a famous person is, you know?
Yeah.
Like everywhere you go, like people love you. You're happy to see them. You're nice to them. They're nice to you. You know, you go to all the best places. You meet all the best people. That's kind of what the dream of being famous is. And I know in reality it doesn't live up to that a lot of the time. But for somebody like Roger Moore, I'd like to think it did.
If I saw him on one side of the street and Sean Connery on the other side of the street, I think I'd be a little intimidated to go up to Sean Connery, but I wouldn't be intimidated at all to go up to Roger Moore.
But you could have gone up to Roger Moore and Roger would be like, oh, there's my friend Sean. Let's go meet him.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yes.
So you'd have an in to meet Connery.
That would be the hell of a meeting of all time, you know.
But, yeah, I wish I could have gotten a picture with Moore when I met him, but you know, I did. You know, I had no idea I was going to meet him when I did.
Yeah.
But I have his autograph on a playbill, so that's something.
That's terrific. All right, very cool. So everybody, thanks so much for listening. In the comments, let us know like what your favorite Roger Moore movie is, whether it's a James Bond movie or another movie that he did. Let us know what you think about Roger Moore. We all love Roger Moore. And so, Dan, John, thanks so much for coming on to talk about this. This was something like I felt like I needed to do just because I love the guy so much. So I'm glad I got to do it with you guys.
I appreciate you asking me, really. I thanks for having us on.
Thanks very much, Rob. It was a pleasure, as always.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you later. Bye.
I loved Casino Royale. I thought that Daniel Craig was really terrific at his action, marvelous. I would have been dead after 5 minutes of what he did in the first few weeks. Brilliant stuff.
Have you ever looked at any, I don't know, internet forums where people debate who is the best Bond of all time?
I've sort of seen odd flashes on, you know, talk things. And I agree with them sometimes when they say I was the best Bond, and then when they say I wasn't the best Bond, I then disagree with them. No, as far as I'm concerned, Sean Connery was Bond, and the best Bond. He created it.
Really? Well, as far as I'm concerned, you were the best Bond.
Thank you very much.
And I actually mean that, just because you were. I think the humour was a good thing. I far preferred it. You could convey a lot with your eyebrow.
Well, that's my only talent.